Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Dee Crouch from Boulder, Colorado. Welcome, Dee.
Hi, Bill.
Dee's a friend of many years, a climber, kayaker, a fellow emergency room physician, and he's kindly agreed to converse with us about balance and communication. When I was younger, my sense of balance was physical balance athletically, and my communication was a command structure which was expected in the emergency room. Was it that way for you?
Yes.
And then after retiring from medicine in 1990, you pursued a career in art, building ice towers in Boulder for beauty and display, as well as where you could ice climb.
Well, when I left medicine, I decided to go and get an MFA, and I, going around the room one day early in my career there, and they said, "What is art?" And I said, "Everything below 32 degrees." And my professors took it up, and so I built this giant ice sculpture on the campus and lived there in a little yellow house and took photographs of it and served coffee to the co-eds in the afternoon.
And then as the weather became warmer, such projects became problematic. And
Yes, I'm now doing one a year, but this next one, if it's 4 feet tall, I'll be lucky. We just don't have those prolonged cold spells.
And so in 2003, you discovered hot-blown glass.
Right, that's right.
What did Walt Roberts say to you that influenced that transition?
Well, the few conversations that I had with him, it was kind of, now you've done medicine, now you need to pursue what you really want to do. And so that was kind of his thing. And I was in such awe, I hardly knew what to say to him at this cocktail party.
What did you learn from him directly or indirectly about the climate?
Well, it was been pretty clear for a long time, and he certainly was at the forefront of thinking about this, that, that things were getting warmer faster and faster.
And tell us who Walt was for our listeners.
Well, he was a high-altitude researcher and basically started NCAR. Actually, he had a scientific station up at Leadville, I believe, after coming out of Harvard and PhD. And anyway, he started this whole mega science thing in Boulder, really.
And was a founder of NCAR.
Right.
So how hot is the fire in the furnace where you transform glass into a molten state?
Well, the furnace is where we keep the molten glass. It has to be kept on all the time. You never let it cool down. We only let it cool down when we repair the furnace, but it's at 2150 degrees. And the reheating oven, where you have to keep the piece going in and out and doing things to it, it's set to 2400 degrees. So you're standing in front of a wide-open blast furnace, and the heat load can be significant. So you have to learn to balance, you know, enough cooling time, enough water, you know, a cold towel around the neck to keep your heat load tolerable. And you make the most efficient use of your time so that you're not just going in and out. You're getting a lot done with each reheat. Last one is definitely a community event because an event that's carefully choreographed. If you're running around a hot shop with molten glass on the end of the stick, you better be in the right place at the right time. And so all this is discussed with the assistants beforehand. It's drawn on the floor in chalk, kids' chalk, so everybody can look at it. And the dance begins, and the person that leads is called the gaffer, and he takes total responsibility for everything. Like, I'm the gaffer, and you're my assistant. We're making Italian goblets, for example. You need to bring me lots of little bits of glass, hot glass. And you bring me the wrong size or the wrong one or the wrong color, I don't say, "Bill, you're a jerk." I say, it's my fault because I didn't teach you right. But this top-down stuff all the time. The community has felt, at least in Italian shops, and I work in an Italian shop. I work in the morning. Angelo assists me. He cooks lunch because he's Italian over the fire. And then I assist him in the afternoon. So sometimes your assistants have to be better than you. Bring great flying bubbles and so forth and so on. So, and balance is so important in this because you're holding a bowling ball on the end of a Q-tip. Now that's really hard to hold. You've got to keep turning it, otherwise it will fall off. Centering, you got to keep these things centered. This glass is moving all the time. I mean, gravity's there all the time. So it's hot enough to work, it's going to sag. So there's the balance there. You have to grab the pipe in a certain way. Not so close that you're going to burn your hand, but close enough so that you're in balance with the glass on the end and the weight on the other end of the pipe. And it's a team event. That's what I really like about it. It's more fun playing in a team than playing by yourself. And with such a long history to draw from, all kinds of glass, I mean, the tradition is 5,000 years old.
Wow. And so
the tradition started because the potters are our friends. In Mesopotamia, 3,000 BCE, the potters learned that they enclosed their fire, they could get high fire pots. They just enclosed the fire. Prior to that, they just threw their pots in the fire, right? Covered it with coals. So high fire, then they learned about glazes, and glazes are glass. Well, then they could make crucibles so that the bronze people could start the Bronze Age. And they started making little glass beads and things. And finally, the first written language was developed in Mesopotamia about this time, 3000 BCE. So the tradition goes from there, and many transitions and across the world. I mean, glass is blown everywhere. And yet it remains a pretty solitary event. It takes years in order to just make a small object. And I spent 15 years making martini glasses, and I'm finally making them that look pretty good. Anyway, it's all about teamwork and balance and communication with your people. You can't ask a beginning person to do something. You know, that's not right. You need to train them. So the primary concepts of bowling glass, at least, are heat and centering, none of which you can measure directly. We know what the furnace is, but once you have that piece out for 30 seconds, what is the temperature? Well, we don't know. It's either workable or it's not. I mean, that's kind of the criteria. And the centering business is the very first little bubble has to be centered to the largest vase has to be centered. Otherwise, as you turn it, it just go lop, 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 and get further off center, and then the piece hits the floor.
So you're not only centered within yourself, you're attentive to the weight and the mass that you've got in a molten state at the end of, as you say, a pool cue.
Right. People ask, oh, can you recycle it? They come to our workshops. Well, not really. You can't mix the blue with the clear, and you're going to have blue and clear. It doesn't mix like paint. It's not recyclable. In fact, most of your bottles, you recycle your bottles, they don't use them anymore, except for very unusual circumstances. They're all just thrown away. All these beer bottles and Coke bottles and all that stuff, just thrown away. It's cheaper to melt new sand to make new forms than it is to try and all these various shapes and kinds and glass, you know?
So you embraced fire and learned to cooperate with high temperatures in a way that wasn't visible to you when you were building ice sculptures.
No.
And the fire of your creativity took the form of an alliance with the fire in the furnace.
Yes, that's true.
You adapted.
Right. I'm on a team that makes big pieces, and my job is to open and close the doors on the the big glory hole, which is this huge furnace, screaming hot. And if you don't do it right, you're going to collapse with the heat in about 5 minutes. So I opened the door and stepped back right in front of a cooling air tube and closed the door up quickly and used a long stick to get to the door. I mean, all these things. Otherwise, I've been in heat stroke in
so,
just a moment.
So you're not only maintaining your physical balance, you've got to be able to maintain your temperature in front of the furnace and get out of the way as quick as you can.
Right.
So you adapted to this new art form, and would it be accurate to say your understanding of balance transformed?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's a new word in my vocabulary.
Balance.
Right. One that I regularly use now and didn't used to.
And
personally or otherwise.
Would it also be accurate to say your way of communicating transformed as you begin blowing glass?
Yes.
And so just to reiterate what I understood you to say is that if you're the gaffer and a mistake occurs, you don't project onto anybody, you take responsibility. And this manner of speaking is old, goes back maybe 3,000 years to the beginning of the art?
Yes. So the potters and the bronze people and glass people all produce 3D art, okay? I mean, there are other forms of 3D art, plaster and so forth, but those are the ideas. 2D art is painting and photography and all that other stuff.
Right.
So it's a different... when you try and communicate a painting, you can look at it and hold it up, and you can't do that with the molten glass. And you have a limited amount of time to work on it. Typically, I pull it out of the reheating oven at 2,400 degrees, and I have about 15 or 20 seconds to work on it before I go back in. So sometimes I even carry my tool, my jack tools, with me. I sit down very quickly, and I don't lose that extra 2 seconds. So I love the precision. I love the handwork. Get the glass just hot enough and you just cut it with scissors like it's paper.
This is William Evans. You're listening to a Shifting Gears conversation with Dee Crouch from Boulder about balance and communication and the art of working with molten glass. So over the past several years in these radio conversations, we've been attentive to the role of trust in relationships, as well as how people make life-sustaining choices. Is it accurate to say that glassblowing is built on communicating in a way that maintains trust?
Oh, yes. When Angelo comes over my shoulder with the hot torch, which is over 5,000 degrees for spot heating, he's torching right next to my hand.
Wow.
I have to presume that he does it right and doesn't slip or doesn't sneeze or something, you know.
So everybody on the team is in this respectful balance dance with hot glass.
Right.
So it's not just...
A lot of times the heat is so great on these big pieces that he dresses up in a Kevlar suit, and I dress pretty much the same, and I hold two great big paddles, they're about 12 inches tall and 3 feet long, in front of him, blocking the heat on his hand. If I don't do that just right, he smokes his right hand.
And it's all over.
Big pieces. Yeah, these are big pieces of glass. I can't even begin to lift them up. We have a really strong 30-year-old that does all the lifting. So everybody has their jobs, and everybody has to do it right. It's like an orchestra. The gaffer is the conductor, and the first violin sits in a certain spot and plays a certain note, and the timpani in the back plays another note, and together they make the music.
So do you have a personal practice at home now that helps you be in balance at the state of composure you you need to step into the team when you go into the shop?
Well, on glass blowing days, I get up early and I sit in my garden. I sit very quietly and I think about what I'm going to do. And usually Angelo says, draw it. Sometimes he does it. He says, okay, we're going to do the same thing next week. But if you can't draw it, you can't make it. So you need to sit and think about, you know. And I get there early in time to, you know, share a joke or two and sort of get my balance and get ready, put on my safety goggles, etc. Check the level of the furnace. Every time you stick your pipe into the furnace, it pulls out some glass. So over time, it gets lower and lower and lower, which changes the angle of pulling out the glass, which changes how much you can pull out and the way you pull it out and so forth. So it's an ever-changing playing field. And the other day, I missed a heat, maybe 10 seconds of heat, and came back, and Angelo punted up the piece at the switch axis, and he went to the glory hole, and the whole thing cracked right in half. I was like, oh, I missed that heat. I was just getting lazy near the end of the day. I thought, well, it's probably hot enough, but got out of my sequence, and there you go. More glass going to the dump.
So this physical balance in your stance and your inner composure is also running with the physical limitations of the molten glass.
Right.
And the team is all trying to dance in rhythm with you around your creative vision.
Right.
Does the respectfulness of this work in the shop spill over into your other relationships outside the glass studio?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm quite a different character than when we were together early in Yakima. Quite a different character.
Well, and I would say the same. But I would assume we share a respect that spills over from our current way into our relationships with the environment and Mother Nature.
Yes. I think glassblowers are acutely aware of how much energy they use to produce funky little objects that, from an energy point of view, if a good glassblower makes a goblet versus going to Crate and Barrel, the energy they use is far less. And so there's a real green feeling. I spent two summers at the Pilchard Glass School in north of Seattle, and it was there's a lot of talk about that stuff. A lot of people were actively involved in various green activities.
Well, fortunately, I see the demeanor and stature you describe during this pandemic, and it can pop out anywhere. I saw it the other day in the grocery store. An older man was working there at the checkout, and he was centered and moving in balance and relating with kindness. Despite all the confusion and fear around him, he moved with grace, and it was beautiful and reassuring to watch.
Well, it's something that the Dalai Lama talks about a lot, about balance in life. And I'm a sort of semi-Buddhist.
You're a semi-Buddhist now, Dee?
Yeah. And I do meditate every day, and that's very useful. Very useful for centering. Gets rid of all the debris. There's so much debris in our life this day, Evan.
Lots of static.
but hundreds of TV channels, you know, lots of junk in the stores.
Yeah, a lot of electronic noise, but the clarity of a clear human voice is really beautiful. I had some conversations with a young woman last autumn. Her mother teaches school at Point Barrow. And I asked her if there was anything we can do to help restore balance in the world. And she responded, well, yes, of course. If we can restore balance within ourselves, we can begin to restore balance in the world.
Right. Hippocrates said that.
I didn't know that.
He said, heal the physician, heal thyself.
It just keeps circling, doesn't it?
Right.
Well, the clarity of your intention means you get to celebrate the consequences of your intention rather than suffer the collateral damage of unintended consequences.
Right.
So clarity is huge. Are there days where you call up and say, I can't do it today?
I've done that once or twice where I, you know, didn't feel good or had a cold or something. But mostly I go in and but I start thinking about it. I'll be thinking about what I'm making a month from now today. So you get to sort out some of the stuff. And the garden is a great pleasure because there's lots of glass flowers everywhere. So I get to look at my stuff. And having a good relationship. I've got a great relationship now, and that makes a big difference.
What does Corrine give you in terms of feedback about your evolution?
It's easier to live with me now than 20 years ago.
Yes, that's what Kay says to me. She's grateful she got me later on.
Right.
So how does all of this relate to this pandemic transition and great confusion we're in?
Well, I believe in science. And this clown we have as a president he's got to go. Let's hope we're not in a nuclear war between now and then. But he is just, having spent 2 months in a Buddhist monastery in Nepal at one time, in the late 70s. I have a real appreciation for silence and for simple tasks. And so it really hasn't bothered me in that way. I mean, I don't go anywhere. I go to the glass shop occasionally. And so that's fine. I don't like what it's done to my portfolio, but who knows, that may get better. I just think that there's so many greedy people in this country. And how can greedy people be sympathetic in such a time? I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of discouraging.
Well, for me, getting in balance and walking down and standing on a rock in the river can clear a lot of that static and wash away my confusion. And what I feel and experience is the joy of being right there.
Right. Right.
And the puppy sits on the rock with me.
Ram Dass said, be here now.
Right. Do you still go down to the Trident, to the coffee shop?
No. It became too much of a people looking at their computer and not talking to them in their cell phone. And I just said, none of that. So I have my coffee and sitting in my garden in the morning.
Yeah, I would prefer that as well. thank you, Dee, for walking with us into this lovely way you're spending your retirement.
All right. Stay well, my friend. Keep in touch.
You as well.
All right. Bye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to a conversation with Dee Crouch from Boulder about balance and communication in relation to his new art form, Blowing Glass. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening. Oh.